Welcome to another edition of Backstory Sessions. I'm your host, Matt. I'm joined by my friend, Kat. This episode is about travel stories. We hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Everyone, I'm Kat, and I want to welcome you to Backstory Sessions, Episode 7. And today we have a really exciting topic for you. This episode is going to focus on travel stories, maybe sometimes some crazy travel stories, and then the backstories of how they got to be so crazy. We have Matt with us today, co-hosting. Hi, Matt.
Hello, how you doing?
Great to have you as always. And we have two really exciting guests with us, and they have some incredible stories to share with you. And they're actually very diverse in the approaches that they took. But for everyone out there, I'm sure you're going to be inspired to step outside of your comfort zone and maybe take a little adventure. So our first guest is Jeff Raisley. He's the director of 6 nonprofit organizations and the author of 10 books, including You Have to Get Lost Before You Can Be Found. So, Jeff, welcome. We're so happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Kat. Glad to be here.
Great. It's really quite a story that you have, and I can't wait for the listeners to hear all about it. And we have CJ Jones. She is an international best-selling author, coach, and motivational speaker, and she also has a really intriguing, fascinating story. So, CJ, so happy to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you, Kat. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. Now, for the listeners that are hearing our podcast for the first time, the Backstory Sessions, sometimes people say, how did you come up with the topic for that episode? Because one week you're talking tattoos, the next week disabilities, you know, and today travel stories, crazy travel stories at that. So where do these ideas come from? So the way it works is Matt and I do a variety of writing projects together. And so each week we look at either a topic that we've written about or are currently writing about. And then from that, we build our episode. So it's framed from our writing experiences. And today's framework, or the backstory, is from Unstoppable by Design, which is a book about Matt's life. And within that, there's a chapter where Matt goes on an adventure of his own. And so when we were talking about this, we thought it would be an interesting episode to, you know, talk to some other people and hear their travel stories. So Matt, we can just briefly go over the adventure that you had. I know it was winter time and you were going on this vacation for the first time, in a long time. Was it 20, 25 years or so?
Yeah.
Since you had taken a vacation by yourself. So divorce seemed to be kind of that motivating factor that pushed you into taking an adventure solo, which I'm sure was a really big change since it was something new to you. So can you just tell us a little about where you went and how it all came to be?
Sure. So it's the middle of February and I'm trying to decide to go, trying to decide where to go on vacation. I feel like I just told this story, but, I can't decide where to go. It's, You know, I for like a couple weeks, I kept thinking Caribbean, someplace warm. I wanted to, you know, want to sit in the sun instead of freeze my butt off. And so I decided to throw a dart. And I got my map out, taped it to the wall, got my darts, and aimed low and to the left, hoping for someplace warm, and it went high and to the right.
And for all of you listening out there, I hope that your mind is racing with where you think the dart landed. Our guest, CJ, where do you think it landed?
Well, high and to the right, I thought Maine.
All right, good guess, a very good guess. A beautiful state as well. And then Jeff, let's give you a chance too. Where do you think that the dart might have landed?
Well, I might be dyslexic and have directions wrong, but I'm guessing Alaska.
Okay, so, you know, very different parts of the U.S. there. So, Matt, are either of them correct?
No, actually, neither of them are. I ended up hitting the northern part of the Black Sea. So, three weeks later, I was on a plane to Odessa in Ukraine because that was the closest city. Didn't know what I was going to do when I got there. Didn't know anyone there. Didn't speak Russian. There was a war going on with the Russians at that time in the eastern part of the country on the border because... So I hopped on the plane, got to Kiev, and went through the airport and ended up setting off the metal detector after I reached into my pocket and pulled out a shiny silver cell phone and held it up, and apparently they thought it was something else, so they wrestled me to the ground and, a few tense minutes, but then... they called me an idiot and let me go on my way. So that was the beginning of my trip. And there were a few other things that happened there, but I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, so you can always read the book and read the entire chapter to know what does happen while he has the adventure in the Ukraine. And because they turned Matt loose from the security checkpoint, you now have this podcast. So I think we can all join in being happy that happened the way it did, because minus Matt, there'd only be Kat. And,
I'm pretty happy.
As am I. I'm curious to our guest today. I'm more on the safe side of adventures, that I could never see myself just waking up one day and saying, I'm going to throw a dart, and if it lands in the Black Sea or, whatever, I'm going to go there. To me, that's just not me, and I can't even imagine the circumstance. So I'm curious. Jeff, I'll start with you. Have you had any experience where you just wake up and you're like, okay, I'm going to do something out of the ordinary. I'm just going to go where the road leads me.
Well, I have done that, but what I thought I would talk about in terms of a travel adventure that has a backstory, in a way, is sort of just the opposite, in the sense that it turned out to be very, very programmed. I had turned 40, was manifesting midlife crisis symptoms, and came home from the office one day, and my wife slapped a brochure down on the table in front of me and said, "Why don't you go do this?" And the brochure was about trekking the Mount Everest Base Camp Trail. So her therapy for resolving the midlife crisis was for me to go take a hike on the other side of the world, which I did. And it, in some sense, resolved the midlife crisis because what she realized was that I had not been tending to my need to go off adventuring. And I was the senior partner in a small law firm, which we were trying to get off the ground, had two young sons, was a very involved father, and I was just stretched and very busy. And my wife very sensitively realized that somebody like me needed time to get away and experience sort of exotic adventures, which I had done a lot of earlier in life. So anyway, I did and ended up falling in love with the Himalayas, with the people and culture that live up in the high mountains, and went back 14 times, became a mountaineering trekking leader, and connected with a Kathmandu-based company. So I still do that. And it also inspired the book that you mentioned, You Have to Get Lost Before You Can Be Found.
So did you take, so on these, did you say you went back 14 times?
Yes.
So did you take your wife or sons, or did you ever involve them in this experience of going back after?
My wife has never had any desire to do something like that. Her, she actually goes to England almost every year, usually on her own, and spends time in manor houses, galleries, museums. So instead of camping out in snow on a mountain, that's the way she feeds her need for adventure travel. And unfortunately, I've never taken either of my boys, because May and October are generally the ideal months to be up in the high mountains, and they were always in school.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that's never worked out, but maybe someday.
So you, what is it about the culture there? You say that you fell in love with it, so tell us a little about that.
Well, the people who live in these remote villages and are either yak herders or subsistence farmers have this delightful spirit. They're extraordinarily strong. They can endure just really incredible hardship, but they have a very sweet personality typically, and they're also, it's an ethic to welcome the stranger as a friend, you know, not somebody to be suspicious of. So I've had wonderful experiences of walking unannounced into a little village, being welcomed into people's homes, being asked to join in a community festival, even a wedding party, you know, experiences like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's, and as I got to know the region better and was planning, you know, experiences like that for other people, I could, you know, I had contacts with local people where we could, you know, make sure that that kind of thing happened for other friends of mine or people that I connected with who wanted to go and experience the Himalayas.
So you say that the culture is very accepting and not really standoffish or fearful, I guess, of people coming in. Did you have any fear going there for the first time? Were you a bit standoffish maybe, or not knowing what to expect?
Yeah, probably somewhat. I was concerned primarily about getting altitude sickness or picking up some, germ that my immune system had never encountered before. And over the many times that I've been over there, I've experienced both of those more than once. So that concern is definitely justified, but I didn't have any fear of meeting, people who lived very different lives from my own. I've been to over 50 different countries and 49 states in the U.S. So, I love that, experiencing people that have different lives and live in very different cultures from my own, it excites me. It doesn't scare me.
Great. So what is the thing that stands out the most about any of the 14 times you've been there? What's that memory, the one thing that really stands out above all of them?
Well, that's really hard to say, but eventually, after I had, climbed a number of mountains and trekked a lot of different trails, what became more important to me than having an exciting, adrenaline pumping experience was to get more involved in the local culture and, in a way, give back to the people who I felt had given so much to me. So I started a foundation that's focused in this one particular remote area where the villagers from a little village called Bassa had worked for me as porters, cooks, guides. And there was an adventure travel company that a member of that village had started and who I connected with. So his name is Nehru Rai. And so Nehru and I started this foundation together. And what's kept me, involved more than just the desire to climb mountains is the desire to see our foundation flourish. And so we've built two schools, health clinic, water system, electrical system, and a number of smaller projects in the Bassa area. So, I know that's like not a great peak type experience, but that's what's become more meaningful to me.
To me, I think that really is an interesting peak because you went there initially because of a midlife crisis, and then you end up turning that. You could have just gone someplace, got over the midlife crisis, and come back and went on with life. But in your case, you go there, and then you find like a whole new purpose and meaning and outreach. It's what it seems like to me. That can only enrich your life when you do come back. But also, it goes beyond just that, what it could have been. So to me, I think that's amazing. And your wife had great insight, so I'm going to give her credit, maybe do you think she understood the impact that it would eventually have?
No way. I think she probably figured I'd go over, have a cool adventure, and then go on and, find some other way to adventure. But she's been very supportive. It has become kind of a family affair in terms of running the foundation and she has no regrets about that.
Well, I think it's a really fascinating story. And I saw some statistics, and I wonder if this is shocking to you, but So people in the UK, they visited on average 10 countries. People in Germany, 8 countries. People in France, 5 countries. And then Americans, only 29% of have been abroad. So is that surprising to you?
No, not at all. When you go to Nepal, you land in Kathmandu, and there's one area in the city called Tamil where most of the hotels are, and so you see trekkers and climbers from all over the world, and Americans are a very definite minority. I've probably met more Italians, more Slovenians, than Americans, other than the ones I went with, in Nepal. We do have out in the Rockies some very active climbing communities, and there's lots of people who will go out and climb 14ers. But in terms of going to another country to do it, not very many people. And I think I mentioned I've been to over 450 foreign countries myself, and almost always when I meet expats and travelers, they aren't from the U.S.
So what would you say to our listeners who maybe have not been abroad, and maybe it's money or whatever the reason, is it worth it? What benefits do you find or
I think one of the reason that the U.S. lags behind other countries in a number of ways, and the reason that there is to some extent kind of a xenophobia, without getting into the politics of it, but
sure,
that's come in, come over our country recently, is because of not doing a lot of international travel among our citizens. And for me, I have felt like I have grown tremendously by experiencing other cultures and people with very different lives from my own. I mean, it's expanded my consciousness. So I wish Americans, did more international traveling, and I think we would be a more open, generous, and wise country if we did.
Your children, so they're young right now, are they, have you taken them out of the country, or do you have plans for that to expose them to other cultures?
Yeah, they're actually grown-ups now,
and okay.
They were 2 and 4 years old, we took them to the UK for the first time. They've been to a number of other countries, and they both love to travel.
Wonderful.
So my son was going to be, the younger one, was going to be the best man in a wedding in Scotland, which unfortunately, because of the pandemic, has been postponed. But,
gosh, wow. Still, let's hope that that'll be on, before too long, and rescheduled, and that would be, sounds like a really wonderful experience.
Fingers crossed.
Yes. Now, CJ, you've heard some of the story of Jeff here, and how it was a midlife crisis initially that inspired the travel backstory. So for you, tell us a little bit about your travel experience and what was the backstory for it?
Well, it was quite difficult for me. I grew up in a large family, and it was very chaotic and dysfunctional much of the time. I left with feelings of shame and worthlessness and the self-esteem that was in the toilet. The confidence was right down there with it, too. And over the years, what I did to cope with it, it wasn't until I was a senior in college that I discovered alcohol. And it was because my fiancé had sent me a Valentine saying he got married to someone else.
Okay, now wait. So,
yeah.
All right, let me just clarify. So he's your fiancé, and then
right.
he sends you a Valentine or a card saying he's just married somebody else?
Yeah, wasn't that nice of him?
Oh, wow.
He was not a keeper anyway.
No. So were you living apart in different countries?
Yes. Yes, actually, at the time, I was at Kent State University, and he was at Ohio State.
Wow.
So we were doing long-distance dating, but then he met someone else and got married. And as you can imagine, I was devastated. And finally,
yes.
my roommates, not knowing what to do with me to comfort me, took me out to get me drunk.
Okay.
And that worked, but I never quit for the next 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I developed a really bad drinking problem. Interestingly enough, I worked as a nurse in some, not doing direct care, I did administrative work. And I couldn't continue when I got sober. I had to quit my nursing. It was difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. So when did you, I mean, how did you get into traveling after that?
Well, jump forward or move forward 20, 30 years, actually 30, where I had left my marriage for another man that I thought was my soulmate. We were spending time together. We had grown to know each other at a very deep level. And I thought, after several months of reflection and journaling about this, that he was acting like a man who likes a woman. And I decided my marriage was irretrievable. So I left. And that's a whole other story I don't want to get into. But one day, the words came to me from this other man, the love of my life. He said to me, "I don't like you. I was only being kind."
Wow.
So again, it was another major blow. And this time, I was shattered. Drank and cried for 2 months. I didn't even feed myself.
Wow.
I couldn't. Yeah, I was a mess. And I literally knew that I was dying. I mean, I knew I was. And one day, because I could feel it, my liver was really bad, quite painful. And one day, I was living on a boat in California at the time in Sausalito. And I walked to the back of the boat and I threw up my arms to the heavens. And I said, "If there's a God there, please help me because I can't do this anymore."
Hmm.
Well, in about a month, I found myself heading to San Diego to stay with my old bartender, who was actually getting sober herself down there. And I was going to stay for a couple of weeks and get a handle on my drinking, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I stayed for a year and a half.
Wow.
I got sober.
Oh, yeah. Great. Great.
Yeah, it was. I ended up going to like 4 and 5 meetings a day because I just, that's what I needed to do. I did a lot of journaling, and about 6 months into it, I was restless. And so, having had a lot of experience renovating things during the course of my life, like houses, boats, and cars, my husband and I used to renovate everything together. And I decided to try it myself this time. So I decided my little Audi wasn't going to cut it for a road trip because I was leaving on a road trip.
Okay, so what made you decide you're going on the road trip?
I had to find myself.
Okay.
I had to find myself. And so I bought this full-size Dodge van that was a wreck inside, and I gutted it and rebuilt it in cherry wood. So it was an incredibly nurturing place for me to be. The first place I headed was down to Baja, Mexico, with my cat, my 20-year-old cat, Maynard. Now, this was in 2002, so I would never do something like that again in today's world. And maybe shouldn't have then either, but I didn't run into any difficulty. But also, being a woman traveling alone, I only stayed in the formal campgrounds, so I didn't get a real flavor always of the locals, although I spent a lot of time in town wandering around, meeting people, talking to people, and that was great fun.
I can imagine.
Was it hard to maintain sobriety while you were there and mixing with the people? And
no, because I wasn't hanging out at bars, and where I was hanging out with them, they weren't drinking.
Okay.
So, yeah, it worked out okay, actually.
And how was the cat through all of this?
Well, I fed him a raw shrimp, and he got sick. And
oh,
almost
no.
died. I had to beat back to the United States. And this is so funny. I was traveling and came across a checkpoint. So I stopped. And I opened the side doors to the van. Meanwhile, the guard had gone around to the back, and he was trying to open the back doors, which were locked. Well, I finally realized that's what he was doing, and he was getting really irate. And he walked in and stepped in and realized he could stand up straight. So he was making motions from the top of his head up to the roof, you know, the ceiling. Like, oh, there's room here. There's space. And he kept saying, solo, solo. And I didn't know what he was saying. And oh, no, he didn't say solo. Finally, he said solo. And I figured he meant, was I by myself? So I was able to, you know, answer him. When I got to the border, and they let me go. When I got to the border, the guys let me across pretty quickly because of my sick cat. So I spent a lot of time in line, but not crossing the border itself. So that was the adventure to Baja, Mexico, the first time.
And so what, well, when that first visit, so you say you went there to find yourself, and so do you feel like you did? And if so, what ways do you think you did?
I found pieces of myself, Kat. I get a lot of journaling, like 2-3 hours a day, and a lot of reading of spiritual material. I discovered my spiritual side. I discovered some positive things about myself, and I say that with some surprise, because for years I had gone believing that I wasn't good at anything. And so I started to believe that I was good at things when I traveled.
So what's something that you discovered you were good at or that surprised you about a positive quality of yourself?
Well, I was really surprised at the way the band turned out.
That sounds amazing to me. Do you have really, pictures of that, by the way? I'd love to see you share those so we could share them with the listeners? I would love to see that.
Yes, absolutely. Do I do that now or later?
You can send them to us later, and when this airs, we'll make sure and
Right, of course. Yes, I have the before and the after.
So how long did that take you? I mean, to me, that's a fascinating part of travel is, you know, like you're not just renting a car. You're like making your own space to take with you. So
exactly.
What was that like? It's kind of like a turtle or something, you know, like move with your house or something. I don't know.
Great. Yes, it was great. And I got a van that I could walk back and forth between the living area and the driving area. Mm-hmm. And that worked out quite nicely.
Well, I mean, to me, that's fascinating. So I can't wait to see those pictures. And so how did you keep it after you got back? And
I kept it for about 3 years. When I got back, I was in Mexico for about 2 months. And while I was there, I was also practicing my photography because I photograph wrought iron gates. So I was shooting. There were some beautiful gates down there that I shot. Anyway, when I got back, I came back to the Bay Area and worked for a boating store and fell and hurt my wrist and needed reconstructive surgery. So I was out of commission for a year while I healed from the surgery. And then I was retrained by the state because I couldn't return to my previous job. And they retrained me as a photographer right up my alley. So
sure.
I became self-employed. But I had one more trip down to Baja that I want to share about.
Okay. And when
When did I do that one?
Uh-huh.
I did that one before I came back to the Bay Area. I had gone to Denver and was staying with friends because along the way, in the course of my life, I lived for 22 years in the Denver area.
Okay.
So one day I'm driving from Denver down to Baja, Mexico, but on the east side, to visit none other than the dock mate who told me he didn't like me. Can you believe it?
Well, that's interesting for sure.
It was. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, and it did not turn out well. I ended up driving back at night, which is a big no-no in Mexico because the cows free roam, and you can easily hit one on the highway. But I had to get out, and so I was barreling down the freeway and was just grateful to get over the border. So that was my second trip to Baja.
So Jeff, do I remember reading that you do photography as well, or?
Yeah,
I used to.
Okay, so both of you have that in common, and I hope that both of you will feel free to share, you know, some travel pictures that we can share with the listeners, because that helps us to visualize these experiences you've had the best that we can, I think.
Sure, happy to.
Yeah, be happy to send some.
Did you have a specific, like she said she takes pictures of gates. Was there something, Jeff, that you specifically sought out to take pictures of, or?
No, just to try to document different travel experiences. So I've written a lot of adventure travel articles and would, you know, do photography so that pictures would go with the articles. But also, I have just used photography to create you know, photo journals along with journals that I would be keeping. But in the Himalayas, so mostly, I mean, I've got, you know, thousands of pictures of mountains and local people.
Great. Well, I hope you will share some of those with us. And, you know, an interesting thing I saw about travel, because we want to promote people to travel, and it doesn't have to be abroad. I mean, even within the U.S., there are many adventures that you can take. But, you know, women that travel a couple of times a year, they have significantly lower risk of heart attack than if you travel, if women that travel, say, every 5 or 6 years. So, you know, it seems kind of stressful planning trips sometimes, but it seems like the stress release and the overall experience of it is healthy. Would you both agree that despite all the planning headaches, that there's a bigger benefit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. For sure.
Also, people seem to be happier. So this could be surprising because I think, in a way, we're a materialistic culture. But money spent on travels makes people happier than money spent on material things. So is that true?
Oh, interesting.
Well, you know, you can spend money basically on two things, objects, which you then have to take care of, or experiences, which become memories and which don't weigh anything, doesn't cost any maintenance. So personally, I've always preferred to spend money on experiences than objects.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. And it makes perfect sense when you say it like that. But do you find that people do, like, buy just things so often when they could take that and be buying those experiences that turn to memories? And as you say, you know, no maintenance, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we live in a very materialistic culture. We tend to judge people on the things they own. I once represented a company that was called Big Boys Toys, and it was a foreign car, a high-end foreign car company. So all these rich guys, you know, were buying Ferraris and Porsches and putting custom license plates on them, kind of, you know, bragging about how rich and successful and cool they were. And I was happy to get paid the fees as an attorney, but I found myself thinking, you know, what a shallow approach to life, that, you know, you think the automobile that you have bought, as opposed to like CJ, who actually made her own, but that you bought, you know, makes you somehow a better person. So, you know, to me, I have too many things. I mean, I don't want to, you know, present myself as an ascetic who lives in a cave. I'm not. I've got more things than I need, but I would still much for, I'd love to convert some of the things I have into just more travel experiences and memories.
Sure. Did you ever consider, like, getting a van and gutting it and making it, you know, your own and taking off, like...
As a matter of fact, when my wife and I got married at the ages of 18 and 21, we left college and took off in an old Dodge van, which had a pop-up. So just like in CJ's, we could actually stand up inside it, and we just bombed around the southeast part of the United States. And camped out and lived in the van, and that was our honeymoon.
Aww. Well, I mean, that sounds wonderful, Cheryl. Yeah, what happens to people, do you think, like you were 18, 21, kind of more carefree, I guess, and then, you know, what happens between that period and the midlife crisis? What changes people, do you think?
I became a lawyer.
But, hear that, everyone? Yeah. It's going to happen to you.
Yeah. Well, you know what Shakespeare said we should do with all the lawyers, but anyway. I mean, it is much easier to be carefree when you're younger and you don't have a career and you don't have children and you don't have a mortgage. But people get to be a certain age. And in our case, I didn't want to have kids or have a house and a mortgage. But my wife eventually is like this nesting instinct just took over. And it was like, we're getting a house and we're going to have a baby, or you're out of here. Take your choice. So I picked door number two and stuck with her, and it's, you know, it's been wonderful. But it's you know, living even when I was a young lawyer and she was in graduate school and then was teaching, even then, before having kids, before having a house, we lived for a number of years like that, and it was still, you know, easier to just take off and go traveling. But even with a house and kids, we have tried to make sure that we spend a minimum of 8 weeks traveling every year, and we usually do more than that.
And is that together? So 8 weeks together and then your own separate, or is that...
No, it's usually half and half.
Okay.
It's, like I'll do a major trip on my own. She'll do one on her own. We'll do a major trip together, and then some little, like weekend trips. And since our son, one son lives out in L.A., and so every year for the last few years, we take a road trip from Indianapolis to LA and, you know, take different routes, see national parks and state parks, and turn that into a driving adventure each year.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. So to both of you, do you see yourself continuing throughout the rest of life, taking adventures and travel?
Go ahead, CJ.
Okay, I do not. Well, I take that back. I may. I said I do not because I like being a homebody, but then there's the issue of, do I want to stay in California and continue to pay these prices, or do I want to sell the home that I have and buy a motorhome and go traveling? So I still have that wanderlust in me, I guess.
Sure.
So I'm considering it.
Okay.
Yeah, I still have wanderlust. It's at a lower level than it used to be. And I've had a number of sports injuries over the years, and climbing Himalayan peaks has gotten to be a lot more difficult. In fact, the last two times, just training for a climb, I injured myself, which is kind of embarrassing. It's like, hey, you know, you get hurt on a climb, that might be sort of a cool adventure. Getting hurt running up and down a boat ramp is, you know, not that cool. But so that's begun to curtail one aspect of adventure travel for me, because it's just Himalayan climbing is, it really is physically demanding. Trekking, not so much. So that may still be in the future, but I, you know, however you do it, I mean, whether it's by car, by boat, by kayak, motorcycle, on foot, bicycle, any travel experience, I think, is going to, you know, add to who you are.
And for both of you, is there one place that's on the bucket list that you haven't been to that, you know, it's that place that you feel like you must go to before you die?
I need to go to the Caribbean aboard a sailboat where I'm barnacling the trim.
Well, I've already been to the Caribbean on a sailboat, so I did it for you, CJ.
Vicariously,
living through.
Really?
Yeah, but
that was nice of Jeff, wasn't it?
That was very nice, Jeff.
Always trying to be helpful.
You outdid yourself.
Yeah, I actually do not have any place that I feel like I just have to see, experience before I die. I mean, I guess I've already done those, but I don't. There are places I want to keep going back to, and I'm sure I'll find other places that I haven't been that will be great adventures. So we'll see.
Any interest in leaving the planet?
Yeah. Oh, I would love to be an astronaut. I mean, okay. I think it would be so cool. And, you know, now that we've got this, they're now space cadets, the new, you know, what's it called? The
Space Force.
There you go, the Space Force. I don't think they'll take somebody over 60.
Well, we can always hope that you get into that. Did they make an exception or something? Yeah. If that's something you like.
Yeah, well, if anybody's got any connections with Elon Musk, maybe I can get on board one of his rockets.
All right, people, get your connections going. Let's get Jeff up there. So, Matt, do you have any last questions for them? Or?
So, Jeff, I'm just curious. As you were telling your story, the first thing that came to my mind was when you came home and your wife put that brochure in front of you, did you have this, like, you know, maybe a second or two of thinking, what's her motivation for this?
I will admit my first reaction was surprise.
Yeah.
I never went to suspicion. So yeah, first it was surprise, then it was and then it was yeah. <That's awesome. laughs>
Did you miss her? Like, were you glad to be back after the fact?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've written about is how sweet reunions are.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when you're away from somebody you love, I mean, whether it's your spouse, partner, children, when you've been away for a while and you come back, it's just so wonderful to hug them and kiss them and tell them about what you experienced and hear what they experienced. So I think in a lot of ways, doing occasional separate vacations or adventures really is rewarding and is helpful to a relationship.
It really builds self-confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, what Jeff said before about how traveling broadens your horizons and makes you a better person and all that, I definitely agree with. I've been a few places, not as many as Jeff, but you know, it's always nice to see other things. We get kind of caught up in our own world, and you know, we don't see a lot of the outside stuff that goes on. And you know, the more you travel, the more you see, and that kind of opens your thinking and expands your horizons and stuff. And that's always a good thing.
It is.
Hear, hear.
So I want to thank you both for being here. Do you have, CJ, do you have like contact information that, you know, somebody wanted to get a hold of you and that sort of thing?
Yes. Yes. My website would be the first way to go, and that's CarolynCJJones.com.
Okay.
And someone could certainly email me at CarolynCJJones@yahoo.com.
Okay, great. And Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, I have a website too. It's my full name. So www.jeffreyraisley, and there's a link to my email if anybody wanted to contact me directly.
Awesome. And we'll share that with you, our listeners as well. As always, if you have questions, comments, or critiques for this show, you can contact us at backstories@gmail.com or backstorysessions@gmail.com, or you can write to Kat and yell at her at iwriteplays@outlook.com. And this has been Backstory Sessions. We appreciate you guys being here and telling your stories. Thank you very much. I apologize for the glitch we had before, but it's been great talking to you, and we hope that you'll remember us fondly.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Great, thank you both.
And really, if you could send us a couple of travel photos, I'd love to see those and share. I think that would be great, along with your bios and headshots. And we'll get those out next week to promote the episode. So, you know, within the next few days, if you could send those to us, that would be really great. Got to see that van, CJ. I'm really looking forward to that. I may take off. Maybe my last episode. I see those pictures. I'm going to make a van, and there I'm going to be gone.
That's funny. All right. Thank you again, guys. Really appreciate it. And thanks for all your insight. And great stories.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. So,
yes, good talking with y'all.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a great evening.
Hearing your story. Thank you. You too, Kat and Matt and Jeff.
All right. Take care.
All right. So long.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.